this morning. We're glad that you're here. Glad to have those of you that are visiting with us. Hope you can come back, be with us again. Those of you that may not have been here the past few weeks, we have been looking at a series of lessons studying questions of faith. We have looked at why we believe in God, why we believe that the Bible is the Word of God, why we believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. This morning, we want to return to that series and talk about why believe in the resurrection. Why believe in the resurrection? Certainly, the resurrection is very critical for us to understand and to believe. In the last lesson we looked at, we determined that Jesus has been proven to be a person that lived in the first century, and that Jesus was a person who claimed to be God. So when you consider that, you're forced to either accept him as God or believe that he was a liar or insane for thinking that he was God. Another great claim of Jesus that has to be analyzed is that Jesus claimed that he would be raised from the dead. And his disciples claimed that he was risen from the dead, and they claimed that they saw him. And so you're left with a couple of basic choices that when it comes to considering the resurrection. If Jesus was raised from the dead, then he is God. If Jesus did not rise from the dead, then Jesus was a fraud and a liar. So you basically have those two choices. And furthermore, if the latter is true, that Jesus was not who he said he was, that the resurrection did not take place, that he was a fraud and a liar, then what we do here today and every Lord's Day is really pointless and invalid in religion. In response to Christ is not doing anything. So what we need to look at is number one, when you consider the resurrection, there's an important question. Was Jesus dead? And that is an area of dispute for some. They claim that, well, Jesus did not die. In fact, the Quran states that Jesus never really died on the cross. In the 19th century, some explained the way of the resurrection by stating that Jesus only fainted from exhaustion on the cross. And we'll talk more about that in just a few minutes. Others say that perhaps Jesus was given a drug that made him appear to die, and later he revived when he was in the cool and damp air of the tomb. You know, the effects of the anesthesia wore off, and he revived. And you know, scholars have talked about these things, and these types of theories really don't make sense. Yet, in the minds and hearts of skeptics, sometimes these questions do come up. So, how is it that we can know that Jesus really did die? We look at Matthew chapter 27. We see an account in Matthew's gospel of the death of Christ, and we'll read that, and we're going to refer to some other details about the death of Christ throughout this lesson. In Matthew chapter 27 and verse 45, "Now from the sixth hour there was darkness all over the land until the ninth hour. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, that is my God, why have you forsaken me?" And some of the bystanders hearing it said, "This man is calling Elijah." And one of them at once ran and took a sponge and filled it with sour wine and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink. But the other said, "Wait to see whether Elijah will come to save him." And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. And behold, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook and the rocks were split and the tombs were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many. And when the centurion and those who were with him, keeping watch over Jesus, saw the earthquake and what took place, they were filled with awe and said, "Truly, this was the Son of God." And so this is the portion of the gospel that records when it was that Jesus actually died, when the, when the sour wine was offered to him, and then he gave up his spirit. You know, what happened before that? How do we know that Jesus? I will consider the things that happened before Jesus died. Number one, there was the scourging. And we won't go into a lot of detail about these things, but when you look at the scourging of Christ, it is a very, very painful ordeal for him to have gone through. Roman scourgings were so terrible that Roman citizens were not to be punished by this method. Eusebius was a 3rd century historian who described the flogging or the scourging this way. He said, the sufferer's veins were laid bare, and the very muscles, sinews, and bowels of the victim were open to exposure. And so this gives you an idea of the pain and agony that would be suffered by this very cruel punishment. And many people would simply die from the scourging before they ever would make it to the cross for crucifixion. So they would die from that beating before they would ever be crucified. And that alone, you know, ought to be enough evidence to know that Jesus really died, because he would have had these wounds unattended for 3 days while in the tomb. He would have bled to death if somehow he had not died on the cross. He would have died from those injuries. But I believe the gospel accounts tell us factually that Jesus did indeed die on the cross. And the crucifixion, when we look at the crucifixion, just like the scourging, the crucifixion was so horrifying that Roman citizens could not be executed this way unless, you know, they were charged for a high crime of treason. Roman historians don't describe the crucifixion, actually, because it was such an awful way for the victim to die. But the shoulders were often dislocated as the arms were stretched out on the cross to nail the hands to the beam. Large nails were driven in each hand and in each foot. And the feet were nailed to the side of the cross. So you think about the severe shock to the body by hanging on the cross from hands and feet, along with the scourging that had already taken place, that would lead to an agonizing death. And also what we see recorded in the scriptures is the breaking of legs is what was going to be attempted. But because of the Passover feast, the Jews needed the bodies down from the cross before sundown, when the Passover would begin. And to hurry death, the legs of the victim or the crucified were often broken. That would add more physical shock to the body. The main purpose of breaking the legs is that the victim would no longer be able to push up with their legs to be able to breathe. And so when you can't breathe, obviously death would come quickly. But in John chapter 19, verse 33, it says that the Roman soldiers, when they came to Jesus, they did not break his legs. When they came to Jesus, they did not break his legs, since they saw that he was already dead. And so this way of hastening death by breaking bones was not done with Christ. So the soldiers are able to assess that Jesus is so clearly dead, they didn't feel compelled to break his legs. So if there were any question, you would have to assume that they surely would have broken Jesus' legs to make sure he would be dead before the beginning of the Passover. And some skeptics like to question the ability of the Roman soldiers here. You know, maybe they didn't realize he was still alive. This was not something that they would be inexperienced with. The Roman soldiers were considered to be the most disciplined army ever. And so this would not be something that they would be inexperienced at. And they may not have been rocket scientists, but they certainly would be able to know how to kill a person and know when a person was dead. And so they saw him. They knew that he was dead. They did not break his leg because that was unnecessary. It's also fulfillment of prophecy. Also, we see the spear was used. In John chapter 19, verse 34, it says, one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and at once blood and water came out. So if Jesus was taken down from the cross, still alive, he probably would have bled to death from the spear wound, as well as that severe scourging, being medically untreated. Further proof, however, is that this fluid that came out from the spear wound. Now, I'm not a medical person, but I have a couple in my family, and the way I've heard this described before is that with this description, you know that the spear probably pierced right through the lung and into the heart, and that's why you see the flowing of the blood and the water, because the fluid here is consistent with what would happen when fluid builds up around the lungs, according to medical examiner. So this fluid reveals that the soldiers were right and that Jesus clearly was dead. And then we see the handling of the body. Everyone who handled the body is a witness that Jesus was dead. The centurion in Mark chapter 15, Mark chapter 15, verses 44 and 45. It says, Pilate was surprised to hear that he should have already died, and summoning the centurion, he asked whether he was already dead. And when he learned from the centurion that he was dead, he granted the corpse to Joseph. And so here we see that the centurion testifies to Pilate, yes, he is dead. Pilate seemed surprised that this had already occurred. So Pilate is convinced of Jesus' death, and he's going to release the body. And so Joseph of Arimathea, took the body, wrapped it for burial. They are also testifying with what they're doing that Jesus was dead. You don't wrap and bury somebody that's alive. And most importantly, the Jewish leaders who wanted Jesus dead are certain of his death, because they are not here disputing the release of the body to be buried. And Jesus' body was placed in the tomb. So, one explanation that critics have is that Jesus was never buried in the tomb, but his body was dumped somewhere. And history indicates, as a rule, that crucified criminals were left on the cross, usually to be devoured by birds or thrown into a common grave with other bodies. But there's absolutely no proof that happened to Jesus. There's not one shred of evidence that this is what happened. The Gospels record that Joseph of Arimathea requested the body of Jesus. It was given to him. Joseph places Jesus in the tomb, and if it was known that the body was dumped, then why would Roman soldiers roll a stone in front of the tomb and stand guard over that when it was empty? The really only answer is that the body of Jesus was in the tomb, and we have witnesses recorded of the women that saw where Jesus was laid in Mark chapter 15, verse 47. Now Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, were watching where he was placed, and so they saw where he was, and we know that Jesus definitely died. And then we come to the empty tomb, that Jesus was placed into the tomb, and so you consider an explanation for that. There's not really many options to explaining how the tomb of Jesus was empty. Some people resort to the swoon theory, which you may have heard before. That, as we've already noted, some people said, well, Jesus wasn't actually really dead. And so, this scourged man whose body has been ripped apart and has been crucified for hours and stabbed with a spear in the side somehow got out of his linen wrappings and rolled back the large stone to the tomb, defeated the Roman soldiers that were outside, and walk through the streets of Jerusalem with pierced feet. That really doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? I mean, but that's what those that believe in the swoon theory believe, that Jesus somehow was physically capable of looking like he was dead and then revived. And you would have to think that anybody that would believe in the swoon theory would also have to believe that he miraculously healed his body and gave himself super strength and able to defeat everybody that was guarding him. But this is a rejected theory because of its impossibility. Another theory is that Jesus' body was stolen. In fact, that's recorded in Matthew chapter 28 and verse 12. Matthew chapter 28, verse 12. When they had assembled with the elders and taken counsel, they gave a sufficient sum of money to the soldiers and said, "Tell people, his disciples came by at night and stole him away while we were asleep. And if this comes to the governor's ears, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble." So they took the money and did as they were directed, and this story has been spread among the Jews until this day. And so this is clearly a way for people to distract and not really deal with what really happened, because you know, the soldiers reported what it was that actually happened. Well, you can't tell people what actually happened, and you know, surely you're going to die, you know, because you were supposed to be standing here guarding. So what you need to do, and we'll pay you to do this, is to tell people the disciples came and stole away the body. So let's think about that. If the body was stolen and the tomb was empty, you know, no one could go to the tomb now and say that the body is there. And the Jewish leaders had to come up with this explanation. This theory is generally rejected by scholars because of the question of, well, who would really have stolen the body? And would the disciples have been able to do this? I mean, would they have had the power to overthrow trained Roman soldiers to do this? And let's suppose that when the disciples broke into the tomb, they unwrapped the linens on Jesus and they rewrapped them very neatly and left the linens on the slab, because that's usually what people do when they're stealthily breaking in somewhere. They want to make sure that they leave the linens all nice and tidy. And then they snuck out of the tomb with the body, walked through the city of Jerusalem, all completely unnoticed. You know, it's not very believable. The enemies of Jesus would not have been the ones that would have stolen the body. I mean, they would have no motive to do that. They did not want people to think that Jesus had risen from the dead. So they would never, the enemies would never have dreamt of trying to steal the body, and I don't think the disciples would have had the power to do that. Another, you know, silly explanation is that it's the wrong tomb. That there's an empty tomb because everybody went to the wrong tomb, and that's not where he was. And so that's, you know, just as unlikely and ridiculous as the other theories. We see that the woman saw where the body was laid, and they would not have forgotten that, where the tomb was located. The Jewish leaders certainly knew where the tomb of Jesus was. If the disciples had gone to the wrong tomb, the leaders could have simply, you know, had the right tomb opened and revealed the body. But, you know, so this really doesn't make sense that, well, everybody's just confused about where the tomb was. And so these are some things that we see to help us believe in the resurrection. The other things that we see, and we're not going to read all of these passages, but what we also see is all these appearances that Jesus had to people after his death, which proves his resurrection. Jesus appears on occasion to Mary Magdalene. He shows himself to the women returning from the tomb in Matthew chapter 28. Let's read that, Matthew chapter 28, verses 9 and 10. Matthew chapter 28, verses 9 and 10. "And behold, Jesus met them and said, 'Greetings,' and they came up and took hold of his feet and worshipped him. And Jesus said to him, 'Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me.'" And we also see in Luke chapter 24 where he appeared to the disciples on the road to Emmaus. And at first, they didn't realize who he was, and then they figured it out. That he, as we talked about last Sunday night, Jesus appeared to the apostles, but Thomas wasn't there. Thomas didn't see him. And then later we see that he also appeared again to the apostles, and that time Thomas was present. He appeared to seven at the Lake of Tiberias in John chapter 21. And he appeared to over 500 believers in 1 Corinthians, which is recorded for us in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. He appeared to James. He appeared to the apostles. He appeared at the Ascension to his disciples. And he also appeared miraculously to Paul on the road to Damascus. He appeared to Stephen. And Paul relates that appearance in to him in Acts chapter 22 and also in Revelation chapter 1, appearance to John is recorded. So this is an impressive number of appearances, but what's particularly impressive is that these appearances were not to disciples only. There were those that didn't believe the claims of Jesus, but they became disciples after they saw the resurrection. Jesus Paul was an enemy of Jesus, killing disciples of Jesus, and Paul is turned into a disciple of Jesus after the appearance to him. And some attempt to explain these appearances by saying all of these people hallucinated. Hallucinations don't usually happen to every person at different times on the same thing. And certainly, a skeptic like Paul would not have chosen to hallucinate in this way. It was against everything that he had stood for and everything that he was doing in his persecution. And we also see that hallucinations don't explain the empty tomb. The tomb is still empty, and that leaves us with one answer, that God really did raise Jesus from the dead. If it was a farce, if it was a mistake, if it was a fraud, it certainly would have been recorded in history. Somebody would have figured that out. With all the evidence that we have already looked at, that Jesus did indeed walk this earth, and that many recorded the doings of his followers, that this would have been discovered if this had been a fraud. Another thing that I believe is powerful evidence for Jesus' resurrection is that the disciples died for their belief. They died for their belief that Jesus rose from the dead. People can be deceived, but when we see that the disciples were absolutely convinced beyond a shadow of the doubt that Jesus really had risen from the dead, and they died for that, they were willing to be martyrs for that. I don't know about you, I would not want to be a martyr for something that I knew to be a fraud. If I had stolen the body and knew that this was all a farce, why would I want to die for something that I knew that was wrong or something that I was unsure about and doubtful about? Another evidence that we see is the conversion of skeptics like Paul, who was killing and persecuting Christians. To become a Christian is weighty evidence that Jesus rose from the dead. Paul didn't want to believe in Jesus. I don't think up until the point that he did, he was not one that was wanting to do that. But when he saw the Lord, he didn't have a choice at that point, did he? He believed in Christ because he saw the risen Lord, and he knew what he had been doing was against God's wishes, and he became the great apostle. So the conversion of skeptics. Another thing that we can see is the changes in culture and social structure, and I think this is something that we don't usually look at when we're thinking about evidence for Christ and what he did and that he rose from the dead. Think about the Jews for a second. The Jews continue to exist today. We know that there are those that still hold to the Jewish religion, and they exist. And how do they do that? They do that because they are determined to hold on to their beliefs. They're determined to hold on to their traditions. And they continue to teach those things and pass those things down to their children. And it's continued for generations. I work with a couple of people who are Jewish, and their whole family is. And they pass those things down. That has continued for generation after generation. Rather than assimilating into other cultures or assimilating into other nations, there's a core of those Jews that continue to to pass those things down and to live by those things. But yet, in the first century, we see hundreds of thousands of Jews in the first century, and this is not just recorded in the Bible, it's recorded in secular history, that they are going against their teachings to believe in Jesus. Now, they're very, very rooted, as Paul was, into their Jewish culture and in Jewish religion. Is that something that was easy for them to give up? You can see from the letters and the scriptures that it wasn't easy for them to give up. They had a hard time, even those who followed Christ, turning loose of some of those traditions that they had practiced for generations. So you see these hundreds of thousands of Jews in the first century going against their teaching that they have believed for a long time to believe in Jesus. No longer would they sacrifice in Jerusalem because they believed that Jesus had now died as their sacrifice. And those sacrifices that they had done before, they didn't need to do anymore because Jesus was now their sacrifice. No longer would they have to keep the Sabbath, but they would worship the risen Jesus. They would be baptized, which pictures the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus and being associated with that. They would partake of the Lord's Supper, which remembers the death and resurrection of Jesus. When you look at the drastic change in culture that took place in the first century and beyond with this group of people, would they have made these kind of life changes without firmly believing that Jesus was who He said He was? Would they have made these kind of changes in their culture if they did not believe that Jesus had risen from the dead? Would they have made these kind of life-changing choices if they knew that this was a fraud perpetrated by the government or perpetrated by disciples, that the resurrection of Christ was a myth? I think it is a powerful, powerful evidence to see the changes that people made in the first century and how Christianity grew and flourished, and people put aside what they had practiced for generation after generation to follow the one who was prophesied to be the Messiah and came and died for us. I think it's a powerful evidence when we look at the change in culture and social structure that happened. Akin to that is the emergence and the longevity of the church. If Jesus did not raise from the dead, how do you explain the millions of people who believe that He did and continue to follow His teachings? If it were all a farce, if it were all a fairy tale, how do followers continue to believe? I know a lot of this centers around faith, but we have a lot of evidence that supports our faith. So when we go back to the original choices that we presented at the beginning of the lesson, if Jesus was raised from the dead, then He's God, and He must be worshipped and obeyed. If Jesus did not rise from the dead, then He was a liar and He was a fraud. When you look at the evidence, what does it support? Evidence strongly supports that Jesus did rise from the dead. And when we see that and believe that, then the responsibility is ours to deal with that, to believe it, and be obedient to what it is that He came to this earth and lived and died for, so that He can be our perfect sacrifice. So I hope these things will be a reminder to you of why we believe that Jesus died for us, and more importantly, He rose, just like He said He would, to sit at the right hand of God and to be our advocate, to be our perfect sacrifice so that we can be with Him for eternity. If we can help you in any way to do that, we invite you to come while we stand together and sing.